All right, Matt, in this week in MMA, we're going to throw it up a little bit differently. It's Canadian Thanksgiving. We're going to get into the Twitter purge. We're also going to get into a weekend recap, and we're going to preview the week of action that there is. So, Matt, let's get into it. And welcome to another episode of Fight Night Picks. As always, your host, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. Matt as well. You can find him at Matt Allen FNP. And listen, if you're new to the journey, welcome to Fight Night Picks. Now, yeah, that sounds a little bit preachy, but we're going back to our roots. And last week, we finally had an episode of This Week in MMA. So what we do in these episodes is we go, maybe not off script, but we dive deeper into certain things. Now, we did not get a submission for round number one. We also didn't post about it. We were very busy. Like I said, Canadian Thanksgiving. So, what we're going to do this week is we're going to dive even deeper into the Twitter purge. Realistically, I'll wear my hat on my sleeve. It's my favorite thing to do here on the show. I like going through and just kind of shining more of a light on some of the issues that are out there. I think the last issue that we have to talk about, it's actually being spoken about quite a bit today. It was mentioned on the Ariel Helwani MMA show, but friend of the show, Michael Fidel, story that he wrote with Body Lock. We're going to talk about it in a little bit of detail. As well, we're going to do a recap and a preview of this week. So you're going to want to stick around for that. You can see it next to me there. You've got Reyes taking on Weidman, UFC Boston. That's coming at us on Friday, which is a little bit different from TD Garden. So listen, it's a fairly deep card, a lot of good fights on there as well. But Matt, what are you feeling for this week? I mean, I'm really excited.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, the last card that we had, it was a fight night card. There's other sleeper cards too. Not a lot of people were talking about it, but that always happens. When it's a card that you don't really have that many expectations going into, and it turned out to be one of the better cards of the year. I mean, there were five or six fights that all could have been fight of the night, and it was a really fun card.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We're going to break down some of those fights, like I said, moving along as well. At the end of the show, we're going to get into a bit of a preview of the week. And if you've kind of just joined us with Fight Night Picks, probably found us with those 2-minute predictions. Listen, again, we're making some changes this week. We got rid of the terrible, annoying alarm clock noise at the end, and we went with the 2-minute countdown. Yes. And the reason being, we changed it a little bit. I do my intro, then we do the 2-minute countdown. Some people kind of complained about it. They want us to go longer with some of these videos. And listen, I love the drone on and on and on, which is the way that I started doing this. I started with an audio podcast where I just talked to a computer for 2 hours and nobody gave a damn. But yeah, I mean, it's just a little bit easier to do it in short shots, 2-minute spurts. And listen, it kind of caps the audience. It's a little bit easier to digest rather than us go into detail. And there's people out there that do it. They will spend a full hour on a prelim fight, but I'm just not here to do it that way. I'm all about trying new things in the space. And listen, we made a few more changes this week, so hopefully you enjoy it. But Matt, let's throw it on over to my favorite segment, the Twitter Purge.
It's time for the Twitter Purge.
All right, Matt, and as you can see it here, I'm going for the strawweight belt. And listen, back at UFC on ESPN Plus, what was it, 19? We're all over the place. There's been so many of them, but Yoni and Jacek taking on Michelle Waterson. We had picked in Jacek. Most people had. The odds makers had.
The breaks off.
What did you think of the performance?
I thought she looked amazing. I thought she kind of looked more like vintage Joanna. And it's kind of been tough because, you know, she fought Rose, Tisha Torres, and then Valentina. And in those performances, I mean, she's way better than Tisha Torres. So it's kind of hard to tell, you know, where she is post-champion. Joanna not champion, I guess, if you want to, you know, steal that from Chael Sonnen. But in this fight, it was against Michelle Waterson, who was on her way up the division. Waterson herself was calling for a title shot for a while, no matter how undeserved it was. She was calling for a title shot, and it was going to be this really fun fight. But Joanna just completely ran away with it. I mean, and she showed more wrinkles in her game, too. She actually went for the takedown. Her takedown defense has always been stunning. That's why I think it's kind of weird, because Tatiana Suarez probably deserves the next title shot, but Suarez has that neck injury. She hasn't even cleared to spar yet. And Joanna, in all seriousness, matches up really well against Suarez. Suarez, if you can't take her down, she's going to light you up on the feet. But no, I thought Joanna looked really good. And it's really weird, too, because just going on Twitter, everyone has this kind of notion that Weili Zhang has this big, big power, and she's like Joanna, but with more power. Weili Zhang has one knockout in the UFC. I know it was against the champ, but it's kind of this weird narrative that started, because Weili Zhang is very much a similar fighter to Joanna. Very volume heavy. She grapples a little bit more, but she's a volume striker who got a knockout in her last fight.
if I was just, you know, spitballing, making picks easily, I would pick Zhang Weili to get the win over Ian Jacek, but I would pick Suarez to beat them both. I think Suarez.
No.
I think Suarez is just so good.
Here's the problem. Is Suarez Ian Jacek a 5-round fight or a 3-round fight?
It would have to be a 3-round fight.
Well, no, because if it's five round, you want to beat the bejesus out of a round 3, 4, and 5. Because Nina Ansarov was able to defend the takedowns in the third round, and she beat up Tatiana really badly on the feet. A lot of people thought that could be a 10-8, and that fight would have been a draw. So the problem is, Suarez has this amazing wrestling credentials, and she's kind of like that female Khabib, where if she takes you down, she's going to maul you, take your back, and choke you unconscious. But she's not good on the feet in the least bit, and her cardio is not great. So for her to kind of get into that title discussion, I feel like she's going to have to keep on improving. So currently, if Suarez doesn't get healthy enough to fight for the title, I would like to see Joanna fight for it next.
Yeah, I mean, she really called her shot, and why not? I mean, you got to keep yourself relevant and in the conversation. She had a main event, of course, trains out of ATT in Florida. So a really big moment there. For Michelle Waterson, it's kind of tough. I see a lot of people out there on Twitter calling for maybe an atomweight division in the UFC. I just don't think there's a big enough
to be four fighters.
There is a big talent pool out there. There is. You just really have to try and find them. You can't just take Invicta's atomweight division and then just throw it into the UFC. That's kind of silly. And a lot of people will say out there, well, yeah, there's a lot of talent, but then you're trying to pull from Road FC. You're trying to pull from one championship. They're not going to let their fighters just leave. So it's kind of difficult if you're the UFC. And I think where they're at right now, I mean, they still have a division in featherweight where they haven't even developed it at all. They had a season of The Ultimate Fighter. Everybody pretty much left. You've got Felicia Spencer, who looks great, but what do you do with her, really? So it's kind of difficult there as well. You've got Amanda Nunes. Does she defend at 45 or 35? It's very difficult. But Fiona and Jacek, a great win there. And then if we move forward in our Twitter purge, according to, as tweeted by Aaron Bronstedt of TSN, conversation that Ioane and Jacek had with Ariel Helwani on his MMA show, is that she hopes Kamaru Usman kicks her teammate Colby Covington's ass, which is kind of surprising. I mean, normally you stick by your teammates, but she doesn't really like the whole character exactly that Colby Covington plays. Are you surprised that she would come out and say it? I'm sure
not
she's pressed,
really, because it seems like every single American top team fighter hates Colby Covington at this point. Jorge Masvidal, Dustin Poirier, Joanna, the list kind of goes on and on and on at this point.
It's weird because you think that those that would know him best would realize, like, this is a shtick. Like, this is something he puts on. The one weird thing about it is the fact that his manager for the longest time was a guy who runs ATT and Dan Lambert. He left Dan Lambert's managerial type aside. Went out, sought out a new management group, but he's still filming these stupid picks. Like, not the picks are stupid.
No,
we do a lot.
Ours are great.
But he makes these picks on Instagram, on Twitter.
Nice to see Colby Covington's burner account as the top tweet on here, too.
Yeah, and he's
like Kevin Durant.
And Colby Covington's associated with a gambling site, which is fine. I mean, it's a good sponsor to have, but he's making these picks inside of ATT. It's weird that they let him do that. They kind of just let the inmate run the asylum, also everybody at the asylum hates him.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the best way of describing it. It'll be interesting, though. That's a really big fight. I'm actually really, really looking forward to it because they're kind of similar. Well, they're very similar in style, too. I mean, Usman takes people down, mauls them. Covington does the same thing, so should be a fun one.
Yeah, it should be a good fight. Now, we kind of switch gears and we go back to UFC Tampa. You look at the performance of the night bonuses. Okay, so first of all, Marlon Vera, Andre Yule. Fun fight?
I told Craig this and he disagreed. Marlon Vera is going to be champion one day, okay? I'm saying this right now. He's on a 5-fight finish streak for a reason. If you've watched all of his fights, the only issue he had was he was a slow starter. He's resolved that issue, and now you see how good he is. And you can say, oh, but he just beat Andre Yule. If you followed Andre Yule's career at all, Andre Yule's a very, very talented guy. Just because he doesn't have a number next to his name does not mean he's a top.
Just because he beat, you know, an over-the-hill Hennen Burrell, and poor Hennen. Hennen. They kept showing him, and he was wearing his little boy shirt, and he was kind of like behind Holly Holm and had to...
Okay, but you're taken away from the win.
But Andre Yule in that fight and since then, he's looked really good. He's definitely UFC caliber talent. He's beating the guys he should beat, but he is a really good fighter and he has a great reach advantage. Marlon Vera was able to get inside, capitalize on it, and get a great win. So good one for Pena. The point of bringing this up was Nico Price. Nico Price was a decent to slight favorite in this fight. It was below -200.
He definitely wasn't the favorite to murder a guy.
And I'll say too, we made our predictions. We both picked Price.
Yes.
And then for the rest of the week, I flip-flopped. I was thinking, man, maybe James Vick could get this done. And in the fight, James Vick looked kind of good in certain spots.
Yeah, like, it's not like Nico Price just blew the doors off. Nico Price started out really strong for the first probably 30 seconds, and then Vick got on top, and again, that's kind of where his demise came from, but he didn't look bad in the
fight. He was on top, he was wailing away. Herb Dean was right there, and you had to think in the back of your mind, is James Vick back on the saddle? Like, is he going to be able to get the finish? And then all of a sudden, he stacked guard, which is fine. I mean, stacking guard up against a cage like that, it's a decent
and then what happened, Craig?
Choice. And then it was an up kick, and old James Vick knocked out again the third time in four losses.
That's bad. You're not Chris Weidman. You can't get away with that.
It's bad. And then so today, James Vick just recently tweeting that he's a Texas-born guy. He wants to hunt and fish, this and that. Matt and I were kind of talking before the show, kind of thinking maybe he should go back to Texas. I mean,
not even that. You just take a year off at least.
The guy's got like a growing family. He's already got three or four kids. I mean, they're all in Texas. He's training in North Carolina with Lloyd Irvin, which a lot of people have their issues with Lloyd Irvin. We've covered it in extensive detail. If you want to go back and watch some of the episodes of this week in MMA,
does have good fighters.
But Fortis MMA is good fight. Like, there's all sorts of gyms in Texas that have good fighters or good coaches. So it's not like I know a change of scenery, maybe he doesn't want to, maybe he's really bought into Lloyd Irvin's system, but it's just tough, and you can see here just kind of the feelings that he's having following a tough loss. And I mean, like you said, maybe take a year off, hopefully. You know, whether you love him or you hate him, because a lot of people, and I saw it on Twitter,
a lot of hate for James Vick.
A lot of hate, and a lot of people, you know, oh, well, what he said before the Gaethje fight. He's trying to sell a fight.
He was.
At the end of the day, it was pretty personal. He's trying to sell a fight. And at the same time, you got to realize this is a guy that was primed to move up into the top of the division.
It's kind of crazy because in James Vick's first 10 fights in the UFC, he went 9-1. His only loss is to Beneil Dariush. It was another brutal knockout, but still. And then ever since then, he's just suffered just extraordinary defeat, if you will, after extraordinary defeat. And I know in one of his interviews before this fight, he was like, oh, well, one of my losses was a close decision to Paul Felder. I don't know if James Vick went back and rewatched that fight. Paul Felder beat the brakes off him, too. Which is kind of crazy that Paul Felder couldn't knock him out. But anyways, another story for another time. I feel like at this point with James Vick's career, it's one of those things. If he gets cut from the UFC, he might retire. But if they give him another fight, he'll keep on going. And it is weird, too, because it seems like up until that Gaethje fight, James Vick was seen as this like up-and-comer and kind of like a prospect.
Yeah.
He's 32 years old. It's not like he's that young in his career. So it's going to be really interesting to see where he goes moving forward in his career.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully it's a year off. I mean, listen, the knockout issues didn't really solve themselves with the move up and weight to welterweight. But hopefully, maybe some extended time off. Because he just gets knocked out and then he comes right back and just tries to get right back on the horse and reset. And sometimes that doesn't always work out. And, you know, we move forward and we talk about another fighter that got knocked out over the weekend. Mike Davis taking on Thomas Gifford. Matt, I was scoring the fight at home. I had the first round a 10-8, but 10-8. I could have seen a 10-7 in the first.
10-8,
probably. The second round, I had another 10-8. And in the third round, I was typing, it's another 10-8. So, listen, I mean, I had it 30-24, but I could have understood even less than that. Like, I had it written out. I could see even less. And then Mike Davis was finally able to end the fight. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous that this fight even made it.
It wasn't fun. Like, MMA is a fun sport to watch. I know we're realizing that people are, you know, beating each other pretty badly. But, like, for the most part, it's an entertaining sport. This wasn't even fun to watch at a certain point. Thomas Gifford, I don't know if he just hasn't been striking for all that long.
No, he's fought for a long time.
I know,
time.
That's what I mean. But in that fight, he didn't even look like he belonged in the UFC. And this is nothing to take away from his opponent, Mike Davis. Because Mike Davis looked really good.
That's kind of the point. Mike Davis just poured the pressure on until even in the third round, he was picking his spots. He was bobbing and weaving. You could tell he kind of not punched himself out, but he was starting to tire a little bit. But he was smart enough with his movement on the feet.
And I saw a lot of people who were upset at Mike Davis because he knocked him out. Mike Davis's job is to win the fight and do it however he can. It's the ref and it's Gifford's corner's fault.
And that's where the issue lies here. I mean, Michael Chiesa is actually one of those. Listen, I've said this a lot of times. Michael Chiesa is one of those guys, like Michael Johnson, who corners a lot of fighters. And I hold so much respect for both of those two guys. Because when you do that, you're not only learning, but look at a guy that's fighting this weekend and Joe Lozon. You see him cornering a lot of guys. He has his own school. Yeah. He's got his own gym. And he does great work that way. He doesn't really have to fight anymore. But Michael Chiesa and Michael Johnson seem to be setting themselves up for a career after point where they're not fighting anymore. And if you follow Case on Twitter, maybe you don't like him as a personality. He's a really smart guy and he offers really good takes on there. And I really liked what he had to say. Yeah, there's no 10 count in MMA, but like Gifford looked like he was knocked out standing up multiple times. Before Davis finished it, he looked like he was kind of out on his feet. And the referee just kept waiting, kept waiting, kept waiting. So A, you had the referee who was supposed to ref the co-main event, which is Price and Vic.
The co-co-main event, that was.
Co-co, sorry. Who knows how that could have gone if we had a referee there. And then the other thing is, between the second and third rounds, and I get it, Thomas Gifford comes out of Factory X. Like, he had Mark Montoya
in his corner. His dad was in his corner.
That's the other thing. Mark Montoya, we talk about him really highly. He's one of those guys like Saif Saud. There's all sorts of coaches. Henry Hooft, Frasahabi. Mark Montoya's up there, man. Yeah, like
top-tier coach.
He can turn around careers. He can help a journeyman fighter like an Anthony Smith. Like, he's a great mind in MMA. But the guys were kind of like, are you sure you want to go out there? Yeah, I am. Okay, see you later. It was weird. And I understand, like, the people that care about you the most, they want to see you find success. Sometimes, like, how often do you get a chance like That's true. But is the risk worth the reward in this case?
Because you're already paid like $10,000 and $10,000, and it's not worth taking years off your life.
You're already losing the fight. And I had, like I said, I had it scored at that point. It was 20 to 16 or 20 to 15. Like, he was losing so bad going into that third round. Why send him out there? It made
no sense. And it is unfortunate. Because good on Michael Bisping, too, by the way. Because Michael Bisping, first of all, phenomenal on doing the commentary. But the whole fight, he was like, guys, we can stop this from about the three-minute mark all the way until the end. And a lot of commentators would not have done that. So good on him for actually mentioning it and talking about
it. The other thing I'll say, too. So the referee that did this fight, he's also a referee in boxing. As most people are, those commissions are usually intertwined. You look at it this weekend, one of the bigger fights of the weekend was after UFC Tampa. It was on DAZN. You had Usyk taking on Chaz Witherspoon. And in that fight, Usyk picking his spots. Like, if you're a boxing fan, I'm the most casual boxing fan. I'll watch some of the bigger names, whatever. But Usyk's one of my favorite guys to watch, and he's moving from catchweight up to heavyweight. Cruiserweight, rather, to heavyweight, not catchweight. But the point is, he was starting to piece up Chaz Witherspoon as the fight went on. Rounds five, round six. The commentators were starting to say, yeah, you know, the referee, and he did, the referee kind of started moving closer and closer. Maybe he's going to end this fight. You look at boxing fights, a fighter might not be out on their feet, but a referee can end the fight.
Yeah, they're taking a lot of damage.
You look at the Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor fight. Conor McGregor wasn't knocked out.
No.
But the referee was looking out for him. Obviously, it was a one-off, and it was a weird type of fight. But the referee was in there for McGregor's safety. And boxing referees usually know what's best. As a generalization. And in that fight, between rounds, Witherspoon's in his corner. He's got two ice packs on him. The referee's there. It looked like the doctor was coming in. And the coroner said, we're ending the fight. We're throwing in the towel. You see that type of thing in boxing more often than not. And to liken it to this fight, Gifford was originally scheduled to fight Brock Weaver. Mike Davis came in on less than a week's notice. But in that boxing fight, Usyk was supposed to take on Tyron Spong, who had to pull out due to the old saucy sauce.
But cougar went missing, and now he's under criminal investigation. That's kind of cool, but continue.
But the point is, Chaz Witherspoon came in on short notice and took this fight, and his corner realized it wasn't worth it. I wish that Gifford's corner did the same thing.
Yeah, and you just wish to see it more in MMA as a total. I mean, the last time I can think of a high-level MMA fight that had happened was Duke Rufus did it with Anthony Pettis broke his hand. But Duke Rufus is, again, he's probably the best, if not one of the best coaches in the world. And until we see that more often from like the high-level fighters, high-level coaches, it makes you wonder about these guys in the prelims, because they always kind of like follow after what, you know, the top level stars are. So hopefully we can see it just happen more in MMA. Because like you said, when you're getting beat that badly and you probably don't have that good of a chance, like if you're not like a Roy Nelson type who can end the fight with one punch in the third round, it's not worth putting your guy out there to just take more damage.
So if we move completely forward from the UFC event, we had a lot of MMA over the weekend. We had Fight Night School, but we had One Century. We had Ryzen. So let's move into Ryzen for a bit.
Oh my goodness.
Patricky Pitbull and Tatsuya Kawajiri, man, Patricky Pitbull looked awesome.
Oh, that's bad.
He said after the fight that, possibility that he wants to fight for a Bellator lightweight title. He wants to fight for a Ryzen lightweight title.
Just let him do it all.
This guy's so much fun to watch. I mean, I know Patricio just won in the Grand Prix, beat Juan Archuleta. Now he's going to be taking on Pedro Carvalho. But Patricky's got it going on. I mean, a little bit of a saltier record.
Five-fight winning streak, though.
But he's so much fun to watch. Do you think he could make his way up to that lightweight title up there? I mean, I know his brother has it right now, but is there a chance he could keep winning?
If Patricio does lose it or vacate the title, because Patricio is quite a bit better than Patricio, just skill-wise. I know he's smaller, but like he has a much more well-rounded game. But they both kind of have that same similarity in their style, which is we're going to hit you really, really, really hard, and we're going to be able to do it for 5 rounds. And that's a very exciting style to watch. I'm a big fan of it. But when you watch Patricio, I know he fought an older Tetsuya Kawajiri in this fight. Kawajiri's still a pretty good fighter.
Yeah.
Definitely not in his prime by any means, but he's still a good fighter. And for Patricio to be able to, you know, finish him in that spectacular of a fashion shows you that, A, even though he's had a lot of miles, a lot of crazy fights, he still has quite a bit left to give to the sport. And I don't see why he couldn't be. I mean, if you look at the top lightweights in Bellator right now who aren't his brother, Michael Chandler, who we've seen recently doesn't take a shot nearly as well as he used to be able to.
And they fought before, and they still.
But still, rematches happen all the time. And Brent Primus, very good fighter. I don't think he beats Patricio Pitbull, though. And Benson Henderson, who
still looks pretty good, but I think Patricio can close the gap.
Exactly.
He's
definitely top five in that Bellator roster for lightweights, which is a really good place to be. And he's only one, maybe two fights away. Let's say he wins this tournament. Then that's kind of a perfect excuse to just throw him into a Bellator lightweight title shot. So nothing but the best for Patricio. Hopefully he gets it.
And I mean, moving forward, like I said, there was a lot of MMA over the weekend. Another one of those cards. You had One Century. Listen, Brandon Vera taking on Ong Lan Song. You had Song getting the win there. Myanmar's own. Listen, Angela Lee beat Zhang Jinan. You also had Christian Lee getting a win. And Angela Lee's win, a little controversial, a little similar to one of Christian Lee's
one
wins.
One championship is just a little sketchy sometimes with how they handle the rules.
And if you didn't get a chance to watch it, Angela Lee had a bit of a, it was a belly-to-belly throw where she threw backwards and landed. It was
like a German suplex.
Was the shoulder the one that landed first, or was it the head? And if you look at one rule set, it says your head can't touch. If you look at another rule set, they're a little unclear.
Yeah, they kind of pick and choose.
They said that they're going to go back and look at it. And like I said, Christian Lee had a fight at one point where it was overturned and overruled because he straight up suplexed a guy on his head. But Angela Lee, a good win. But on that first card, the part one, Demetrius Johnson getting a big, big win. Of course, he wins the belt in the finale of the tournament, and it's awesome. The one thing I want to say about this, and I had it typed out, and then I deleted my tweet, is Demetrius Johnson still a top 15 pound-for-pound guy?
Oh, without a doubt. He's not number one, but he's top 15 pound-for-pound without a doubt.
A lot of people have him in their top fives. I would just caution there because, yeah, I know some of these guys like Sage Northcutt gets knocked out against a way bigger...
Cosmo Alessandre. Legit. But how is he way bigger if they're all under hydration tests? And
we're
going to
get into that later on. But even Demetrius Johnson struggled in a couple spots. Eddie Alvarez lost to Timofey Nastyukin. Listen, it's a worn-out narrative. My point is, I don't know if he's still a top 5 pound-for-pound guy.
He's top 15.
I think he's still in that top 15 type of conversation. And even here, one championship, trying to be a little cute, saying when you receive the biggest accolade of your career, it's great for him.
Well,
it's
is, because the belt weighs 500 pounds.
It's neat. It is a cool belt. I'll give him that.
It weighs so much, though.
But a really good event that they had as well. And then moving forward, too, he had Bellator 230. We didn't cover it in a whole lot of detail. It was really hard to try and follow this event on Saturday because the majority of it was by tape delay. And Bellator did that stupid effing thing where they go Bellator Milan, but also Bellator 230.
Like,
and we have two different main events. But Alessio Sakara fought a guy who was 8-7 and knocked him out the first round.
Who hadn't fought in 2.5 years.
Vadim Nemkov looked awesome in his fight. Beat former champ Rafael Carvalho at 205. Hopefully we can finally see Vadim Nemkov get a title shot.
It would be great because like Ryan Bader needs someone to fight. And I don't want to see him fight Chuck Congo again because that fight was awful for as long as it lasted.
I think Vadim Nemkov, I mean, you look at his record and he's only lost some really good guys. Yuri Prohashka was one of those guys that we talked about at one point who won this weekend in Ryzen against Fabio Maldonado. But Vadim Nemkov is one of those guys that I think if he can beat Ryan Bader and he's already beaten Carvalho and he's already beaten Liam McGarry and Phil Davis.
We're doing Musashi super fights.
Like, he's already beaten pretty much everybody in that division. Give him the damn title shot already.
Oh, without a doubt. And Ryan Bader, he doesn't have that much competition in Bellator right now. And I only say that because no one wants to see him and Phil Davis fight again, and Nemkov beat Phil Davis. So do that fight, because Nemkov poses so many different questions and just problems for Ryan Bader. Ryan Bader doesn't take a shot overly well. Vadim Nemkov's going to hit him awfully hard. Ryan Bader doesn't check leg kicks. You know who throws a mean leg kick? Vadim Nemkov.
The thing that'll be interesting is the fact that they're both upstanding wrestlers. They are. Or outstanding
wrestlers.
And that's
the thing. It's going to come down to Ryan Bader is probably the better wrestler, but once it hits the mat, is he the better grappler? So it's a really fun fight, and it's one I don't even know what the odds would be. They'd probably be pretty even just due to the fact that Ryan Bader's been on such a tear in Bellator, and no one give him a hard time because he's kind of boring. But Ryan Bader's, without a doubt, one of the top five 205 pounders in the world.
Two more news-worthy events with Bellator. Melvin Manhoff getting the win over Yannick Bahati. That was kind of crazy. And the other thing, they announced, I don't have it as a tweet, but they announced that Fedor is going to fight Rampage Jackson in Japan in association with Ryzen. So, interesting stuff. I personally think the cross-promotion between some of the smaller promotions in there is pretty damn cool. So, I like it. So I think it, you know, it promotes, you know, different opportunities that you wouldn't have otherwise. We already talked about Patricky Pitbull beating Kawajiri. There's all sorts of great things that can come of it. You're never going to see the UFC do it.
Unfortunately.
But it's kind of neat. And then again, if we move forward and completely switch gears, I actually watched the majority of this. I didn't watch the whole thing. But you had Anthony Johnson on Below the Belt with Brandon Schaub, and he talked about making the cut to 205 pounds, wants to fight John Jones. The first thing that Brandon Schaub said in the video was, man, you look lean. Like, he's gotten off the bodybuilding thing, and he does look slimmed down quite a bit so that he might be able to make 205 with relative ease. Okay, Matt, so if he does make a comeback to the UFC...
He's not beating John Jones. Sorry.
Who would be a likely first opponent?
Derek Lewis, of course.
At 205.
At 205? Let me think really quick, because you didn't ask me this before. I'd like to see him fight like a Jan Blachowicz, maybe a Volkan Ozdemir. Volkan Ozdemir would be a really fun one, because there was a lot of kind of comparisons between Ozdemir and Rumble when Ozdemir had his first little win streak to get him that Daniel Cormier fight. As everyone will remember, there was, he's got no time. No time Ozdemir, and he knocked everyone out in under a minute. That could be a really fun fight, I think. I just don't like, because Rumble's like, oh, I would be willing to go down to 205 to get an automatic title shot. Well, no, duh. I would be willing to gain 70 pounds to fight John Jones. I really don't care.
The other thing is, his last fight was a loss to Daniel Cormier, and he talked about it in this interview where, listen, mental preparedness, just overall preparedness wasn't there. He wasn't ready that night, whatever. And you hear that from fighters sometimes, but it's just disappointing when you say, I didn't practice and I didn't prep properly enough and I wasn't ready for that fight.
But
next time, if there is a next time, I want the title shot right off the
bat.
And
even add on to that, he said that about the Daniel Cormier fight the first time he fought Daniel Cormier. Mm. He fought him twice. The fight went the exact same way both times. DC just drained him and then choked him out. So I've never been a massive Rumble fan, if I'm being completely honest, because Rumble's really good when everything's going his way. It's like the Mike Tyson effect. He wins until he doesn't. Whereas until he faces any kind of adversity, he does really, really well. But the second he faces any adversity in his fights, he kind of starts looking for a way out, and that style's always really bothered me. So I do think if he comes back to 205, since it's not the deepest division in the world, he could be able to get that title shot relatively quickly. But I don't see him beating John Jones anytime soon.
I like the excitement. He's a knockout guy. And listen, you look at the fight that he had against Ryan Bader. Like, that was over very quickly. And another wrestler and a champ that we already talked about. So Matt, this brings us to our last topic of the Twitter purge. And listen, hats off to friend of the program, friend of the Craig. You heard it on Ariel Helwani's MMA show. He referenced a story by Michael Fidel. That's how it's said.
Fidel.
But Michael, listen, he's doing the Lord's work over with Body Lock. So A, hats off to the Body Lock in general. Jake, Michael, everybody that's over there, you should definitely follow along with what everyone's doing there. Mike Heck, Drake Griggs, all sorts of great guys there. Okay, so Michael wrote a great article about not only what happened between Dominance MMA's Ali Abdelaziz, but also, you know, just the whole ties that he's had. Because if you weren't really entrenched in the story, go back to World Series of Fighting, and it's in the article. There was one little graphic that they put up on their screen when it was still World Series of Fighting. It says in the tweet that it's PFL, but that's just because the Twitter has switched over from World Series of Fighting to PFL. But on the World Series of Fighting graphic, it says Ali Abdelaziz, SVP. So he was a senior vice president somehow of World Series of Fighting, which is a huge conflict and a huge issue because the guy's a manager. You can't hold a title within an organization, especially, you know, having any hand or any say
over the matchmaking of your own fighting roster.
Exactly. And the one thing that I want to say, we talked about this before the show and we were kind of coming up with it, is the fact that Dominance MMA is a huge network of fighters, your figurehead, your manager, Ali Abdelaziz. There's a lot of layers and a lot of people involved in it. And it's hard to see a card, whether it's UFC, whether it's Bellator, PFL, whatever the card, that he doesn't have his hand in, because he has a lot of fighters signed to his roster. And for the most part, if you go down through it, he does quite well for them in terms of dollars and cents. He normally, you know, maximizes the return for the fighter.
And he can get you a trip to go see Kadyrov.
He can do that too. But there's so many conflicts of interest with this guy. And the other thing that rubbed me the wrong way from last week is that there was a media day for Dominance MMA, and you saw a lot of major mainstream organizations covering it, but not asking any of the tough questions.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them.
And I understand why, because, you know, you'd have to worry about possibly, not necessarily losing credentials, but losing access to some of those fighters and some of those contacts. And let's look at some of those fighters. I mean, you've got Kamaru Usman, Henry Cejudo,
Frankie Edgar, Khabib Nurmagomedov.
The list goes on and on. A lot of the good fighters in the world are signed with this guy. And then a lot of the other good fighters in the world are signed with the two Cowell brothers, Malky and Ibrahim. And listen, they're good managers in their own right. I mean, again, their job is to maximize the amount of money they can get for their fighters, which they do. But we've already seen two dust-ups with Ali Abdelaziz at two different PFL events in two seasons. It happened in season one. It's happened in season two this past week when they had an event in Vegas, which, I don't know, maybe it was a change of location and we weren't fighting in the East, in the New York, New Jersey region. We had this one in Vegas, of course, with the playoffs starting. But it's just, you can't, we understand it. You can't act like this in public.
No.
You just can't. Like, it's weird that nothing happened. I mean,
and that's the thing. There's never any repercussions for when he does it. If anyone else on planet Earth or inside of like the MMA landscape were to act the way he does or treat people the way he does, there'd be massive repercussions for them. But it's due to the power that he holds and the roster of fighters that he gets to oversee, is that no one really wants to speak out against him due to the fact, like Craig said, that they might not lose press credentials or whatnot, but they're not going to have the same level of access to his level or to his fighters. And those fighters' stories and their interviews are how a lot of people make their money in this business. So it's really unfortunate that people are somewhat afraid to speak out against this guy in a larger capacity.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, like we said, and it's no joke or anything, Michael's doing really good work over there with the body lock.
Well, he's like already the whole VADA the one championship.
VADA will choke one championship article that really gained a lot of steam. I mean, he's doing great work. Of course, he's over at Vanderbilt right now. He's earning a journalism degree. So want to congratulate Michael for another great article for sure. I'm sure we'll have him back on the show. And, you know, we're always in constant communication with him. But, he did a great job here. And it's just a shame that we don't see as much, because Ariel shines a light on it sometimes.
But
sometimes
it doesn't.
But we saw it, and it might not have been the last time, and hear me out here, but he did it. He has had Ali Abdelaziz on a show before.
I was poisoned.
And it's less about pointed questions, and it's less about the fights and the fighters. It's more about like the personal beef that they have.
Yeah.
And then they'll kind of do a little bit of a runaround, and then it seems like it's settled. So yeah, this guy's kind of a wild man running the show. Yeah. And another guy that's really doing good work, and hopefully finally maybe we can see the podcast, is Mike Russell, because this guy does not like Mike Russell. Mike Russell's been subpoenaed into one of the trials for Ali Abdelaziz. And you know, it's gonna have to be a tell all, because you have to show everything you have on. So be sure this story is going to unfold in the months and the years to follow, but be sure to follow along with Michael Fidel and Mike Russell as well. And we've had Mike on the show before. I think he was on, it's probably about a year ago, to talk about his podcast. And it doesn't happen very often, but I was short on time. If I had an hour or two to speak with Mike Russell, we could have filled that. Mike just kept going on and on, and it never happens where I had to go, but I did. But be sure to follow along with those guys, because listen, I mean, this is a Twitter purge for a reason. You have to shine a light on things like this. It can't all be fluff, and we can't all talk about Patricky Pitbull knocking out Kawajiri. You have to kind of dive into some of the tougher topics, and hopefully this one gets more traction than we've seen. Of course, it has with what Ariel Helwani said today on his show, and that's a big platform. That's the biggest platform, ESPN. So hopefully it continues to move along and, like I said, follow along with Mike Russell and Michael Fidel. And now we will get into it. We'll get into a weekend preview. Listen, we've got tons of fights coming up this weekend. We got UFC Boston, among others. So, Matt, without further ado, let's get into it. Fight Night Picks is brought to you by Strikeforce Energy. Head on over to the website strikeforceenergy.com. If you enjoy the flavor of freedom, the company's veteran-owned and everything's made in America. They've got great apparel. You can turn any 16.9-ounce beverage into an energy drink. There's no sugar, no calories, no stirring, or no shaking required. They also have a line of different products as well as Strikeforce coffee. So if I head into my cart, I've got a 4-count sample pack. I've got a 20-ounce coffee mug. And if I head into that checkout, use the promo code FNP, click to apply, and you're going to save 20% off any order. That's FNP at StrikeForceEnergy.com. So it's brought to you by Spritzbox. Head on over to the website, Spritzbox.com. All you have to do, click to get started. You can either order one of their boxes that has over $100 in value, or maybe you're interested in a single item, like these great socks. So click on them, add them to your cart, head on over to the checkout, and then all you have to do is enter in the promo code FNP as follows here. You'll save 10% off your first box or your complete first order. That's spretzabox.com. All right, Matt, so if we're going to preview this weekend, listen, I get it. I hear you out there. We're going to make some changes, and I'll throw one of them out there. So Matt brought it up before we did the two-minute predictions for UFC Boston. What we're going to start doing, we're going to change them from two-minute predictions. We're just going to make them predictions. We're going to do 3 minutes for our main card. We're going to stick with the main card. We'll have prelims as maybe a 5-minute video where we'll just run through them quick. Our main card fights, they're three-minute rounds. So we're going to do 3 minutes.
Three 5-minute rounds, but 3 rounds nonetheless.
Whatever, I'm all over the place. We're going to do 3 minutes. And then for our main event, we're going to do 5. If it's one that hasn't been done before, like what we had this week with our co-main event.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of a one-off where you have a no contest that lasted less than a minute. So if we're looking at UFC Boston... And listen, there's a lot of good fights on this card. We talked about Tanner Boser making his debut. He's a guy from Alberta that was supposed to be fighting on the Edmonton card, but his opponent, Juicy Boy,
can't be doing them.
And that fight didn't happen. So now he's taking on Daniel Spitz. And man,
it's a tough fight.
Daniel Spitz, I thought at one point maybe something could happen at heavyweight. But he's just not really a dynamic.
Cracking on that Daniel Spitz trade. He's on just, there alone.
He's just not really a dynamic enough guy. His clinch game is not good. His ground game is not good. His striking, he's rangy.
He's a straight up scrub.
But that's he's not Craig that great. And Tanner Boser, to his credit, man, the guy's a cardio king.
He
can last a 3-round or 5-round fight. He moves forward. He throws kicks really well. And of course, you know now how important leg kicks are in MMA. Like, the last 2 or 3 years, they just continue to grow. It's no longer the time where in MMA, you could get into side control on the ground and just throw knees and end a fight. You don't see that. Leg kicks are a huge, important part of the game. I have Boser getting the win here.
So do
I. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, Spitz is a decent guy to debut against. He's not one of those guys that we used to see like Anthony Hamilton, Christian Colombo, Cyril Asker. You've got half decent guys like Daniel Spitz to debut against. Then if we continue on, Brendan Allen, again, another guy that was supposed to get his shine, get his debut. Guy was a champ in LFA. Coming in and taking on Kevin Holland.
Kevin Holland is so frustrating if you're just a fan of MMA, because you realize that his potential is very, very high, but he does not fight to that potential. He's kind of like Benson Henderson. Win or loss, Kevin Holland's going to fight with split decision. His fights are always very close. He's not great at anything, but he's very, very tough.
Like current Benson Henderson.
Okay. Because Kevin Holland, every single one of his fights goes split decision, unless he's getting beat up by Thiago Santos for 15 minutes. And that's just kind of how his style is.
He is good. Like, you can see flashes of brilliance.
Exactly.
There.
But it's not sustained over a 5-minute round.
He's one of those guys that just has to bring it all together. Like Olivier Aubert-Mercier, like Gilbert Burns. We always said.
Gilbert Burns far better than Kevin Holland.
Either way, it should be a good fight. And I'm really looking forward to more Brendan Allen.
Boston Salmon.
You have Court McGee taking on Sean Brady. Sean Brady undefeated coming in here, taking on McGee, who we haven't seen in quite a bit of time. I know he fought since the Moncton card. It was a loss in that one after the fact. But Court McGee. In my mind's eye, he's been around since the start.
Since the dawn of time itself. Court McGee, first of all, shout out to Court McGee. He does a lot of really good work.
In Utah?
Well, not only in Utah, but just with drug counseling, being a... a former addict himself. I forgot words for a second. And he does a lot of really good work with
And actually, to interview a guy, Court McGee's one of the nicest guys I've ever met in the space. So it should be a decent fight, like I said.
Court McGee's a great measuring stick for a young guy coming into the UFC, too, because he's not in the top 15. He's not really even in the top 25. But he's a really good wrestler, and he's got phenomenal cardio. So he's going to really test any up-and-comer who's going to go against him, and he's kind of perfect matchmaking.
And then if you look at the next fight, Randy Costa coming in with a huge wave. A lot of people really looking forward to Randy Costa, and his first fight did not go well at all.
Not at all.
And he's going to be taking on Boston Salmon, who we had to wait and wait and wait. He was on Contender Series Season 1, had his first fight in the UFC this year.
Got hit so hard he did a 360.
Didn't go all that great. So two guys looking to right the ship. Of course, Boston Salmon in Boston. Randy Costa, he's a New England guy, so it should be a decent fight there. Then you got Kyle Bochniak taking on Sean Woodson. That should be a decent one as well. I mean, you always know what to expect in a Kyle Bochniak fight. It's just forward pressure. He's like a zombie. And Sean Woodson, I mean, kudos to him for getting this fight in his debut, because not a lot of people would sign on.
No, exactly. Fight. I mean, Kyle Bochniak has a very fight-of-the-night style friendly fight. Like you said, always comes forward. He's going to give you a good fight no matter what.
Molly McCann taking on Diana Belbita. I also saw that in Belbita's corner is going to be Kyle Nelson from Canada, who we've seen the monster. He finally got his first win in the UFC. You go look at her record on Tapology or SureDog. She's certainly proven this is her debut. And it's a tough debut to take because old meatball Molly McCann, like she's one tough SOB.
She is. She's got very heavy hands, really good defensive wrestling along with offensive wrestling. The only time that we ever really saw her in trouble was that Jillian Robertson fight. But the only problem with Molly McCann is she keeps on begging for like a title shot after beating someone who's making their like UFC debut. And I know, you know, you kind of got to shoot up, but let's calm down a little bit. But it should be a really good fight. Molly McCann, again, has kind of that fight of the night friendly style fight.
And I think Belbita ultimately going to get the win here. Really? I'll go on record
Molly
as saying
McCann's
that.
Molly McCann's going to win by decision.
I really like her fight style. And listen, like I said, look at the level of talent that she's faced in the past. There's some notable names on there as well. In your featured prelim, as it's set right now, Charles Rosa, a guy from Boston that we haven't seen in a hot minute, taking on Manny Bermudez, the triangle, Bermudez triangle. He lost his last fight.
He did.
Which is weird, but I'm definitely going to take Bermudez.
Yeah, Charles Rosa is kind of weird.
And Bermudez moving up in weight, because he was a long-time bantamweight, missed weight terribly in his last one, and now more or less forced to move up.
Yeah, but his grappling credentials speak for themselves. I mean, he should win that fight quite comfortably.
And in our two-minute predictions that are here on YouTube on the Fight Night Picks channel, you're well aware of them, but we'll run through these pretty quick. We both had Duran winning this one. I have Robertson.
Yeah, I have Barber by decision.
I've got Pierce
so do I.
Over Lozon. We both have Greg Hardy over Ben Sassoli, but it should be a decent debut for Sassoli. Just to me, he's kind of like, and it's not because of the location, but he does kind of fight like a Marquand, where he takes an
but
awful
not
lot of shots.
But just not nearly as good.
And, I mean, it's not like he's like a southpaw, so he throws a weird look at Hardy. He's an orthodox fighter, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. You got Yair Rodriguez rematch with Jeremy Stephens. We both had
TKO round two.
Yeah, I think Rodriguez is going to be able to get it done as well. And then Dominic Reyes, Chris Weidman, where we both picked Dominic Reyes.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Weidman goes out there and win. Like, he could get Reyes to the ground and just be really heavy on top, tire him out, and then maybe get a submission at some point. I just feel like the damage that Chris Weidman has taken in the last five fights has been just so much more than most people experienced throughout their whole career. Even the win that he had, he got dropped really hard in that fight. So I just think Dominic Reyes, he's going to be able to get it done. He's much more well-rounded. He's kind of the future of that division, people believe.
It is a good card, and there's a lot of different cards this week. You got PFL 8, more of the playoffs, of course. A lot of people were really critical of the playoff format, and
I can't.
They've been making changes since last year. It was weird because you had the guy who was the best at welterweight this season in Magomed Kerimov. So he wins his first fight of the night, then he has to pull out due to injury. So then you have Ray Cooper III that steps in to fight Chris Curtis, and Chris Curtis... Exactly,
third.
Sorry. Either way, Chris Curtis has had a good season. It looked like, maybe Dana White made the wrong decision and should have picked Chris Curtis to be in the UFC. Curtis comes in, Ray Cooper finishes him, and then Chris Curtis retires again. So it was kind of a shame there. Ray Cooper's had a weird season this year from the PFL that I followed along with, I will admit. I haven't watched enough PFL this year, but I mean, you got the featherweights, you've also got the lightweights here.
Jeremy Kennedy.
Some decent names that you're gonna recognize, of course. Lance Palmer won season one, Andre Harrison, like you said, Jeremy Kennedy, Natan Schultz, Ramsey Najem from
The Ultimate Fighter.
Exactly.
Got knocked out by Tony Ferguson.
And Chris Wade as well. So a lot of good fighters on this card. Definitely something to check out. Again, this one's going to be from Vegas like it was last week. Hopefully we don't see the fireworks like we talked about. The Twitter purge. Hopefully it's just fireworks in the cage, not outside the cage. And maybe they won't let Ali Abdelaziz in, but they probably
will. No, but they're
going to.
He's going to be front row.
Yeah, they probably will. But it's a decent card there, so if you want to pay attention, PFL number 8, the playoffs. You've also got Combate 47.
They get the same amount of years as one championship.
Yeah.
90 billion.
I mean, some half-decent fights here. If you're following along with Combate, of course, it's going to come to a head because you got Tito Ortiz taking on Alberto Del Rio.
Alberto Del Rio, to his credit, did fight Mirko Krokop, and he did it with a mask on, which is kind of hilarious, but he's not an MMA fighter fighting a guy who's 73 and can barely speak anymore, so it's not really a fun fight, and it's really, really sad.
You got M1 Challenge 105. The reason why I bring this one up, there's actually some really, really good fights on this card. Like, I was going through this last weekend. A couple of the names for me, Per Franklin's actually one of those guys at 170 that's kind of bounced around. I know he's got a 9-5 record. A lot of fun fights there. There are a couple names here for me. Artem Damkovsky is a guy that's had a lot of big-time fights. You know, if you paid attention to the UFC, maybe you saw his fight against Demir Ismagulov, because that was the last time you saw him. That was for the title there, and it was a really weird finish in that one, but Artem Damkovsky. And then the two fights at the top there, the main one for me, Armin Ashimov is really, really good. He's a Kazakh, which, again, that's where you're going to see this card. But you look at his record, I mean, yeah, a hand injury against Alexander Deskalchuk. He's really good in his own right.
Exactly.
But then three straight wins. Now he's going to get a chance against Nova Scotia's own Chris Kalaitis, who won the title in his last fight. And Chris Kalaitis, I mean, he fought in the UFC as recently as, I believe it was 197.
I think so, yeah.
And, I mean, he's put on a pretty decent performance over in M1 Global. Then you've got Sergey Morozov taking on Josh Reddinghouse. You might recognize Josh Reddinghouse if you're a US MMA fan from Warrior Camp MMA, on a pretty decent win streak between King of the Cage and M1 Challenge. So it should be a pretty good card. You've also got Fight Nights Global, of course, last weekend. You had, Dmitry Smolyakov getting beat, which was kind of a surprise there.
We did not.
By decision. The reason I bring this up, you got a former UFC title challenger here.
Argentina. Now, did he do all of the EPO? Yes, he did. Did he get caught for doing EPO? Yes, he did. So, can't be having that.
Yeah, you get Ali Bagatinov taking on Zalaz Zhumagulov. Should be a good one at flyweight. A lot of big-name flyweight fights this weekend.
It's like John Anik with these names.
Outside of the UFC. And I want to take a second to point something out here. I learned something from ring announcer Jeff Houston. If you're not going to pronounce the names properly, don't even bother and don't even try. So, a little bit of, high heat from Jeff Houston, but words that I live by, because there's nothing worse than watching interviews or watching a show like this, and the guy is just butchering somebody's name. I mean, we get, for North America or for Western English speakers, native speakers, Craig Allen Maddow, pretty easy stuff,
yeah,
but for somebody else, it might not be, and, like he kind of said, you got to show a little bit of pride. You've got Vartan Asatryan taking on Ramison Bruno. That's a decent one. And another one of those names on one of these cards that maybe you're not paying attention to Fight Nights Global, but you should. Maxime Buterin. He's one of those guys that you look at the wins and the losses. Decent records, maybe a little padded, but he's one of those guys that you definitely have to watch out for. And it's a lot of fun when you watch some of these cards, especially some of these Russian cards, whether it is an ACA, Fight Nights Global, an M1 Challenge. And then you see a guy like a Demir Ismagulov, Sergey Kandoshko, and so on and
Askar Askarov
appear in the UFC. So sometimes it's worth it. The production value is really good. And then the one other card this weekend that you can watch on Fight Pass, Titan FC 57. They're always putting on really good cards. Couple of the names that bounce off the page for me, because they're going over to Dominican Republic, which that's Titan FC cool. Sometimes does weird things like that. Muhammad Usman, training at a Fortis MMA. He's a big guy. His nickname is The Motor. He's 4-1.
He doesn't pass the eye test, I'll tell you that much.
A lot of finishes and a bit of time off. And then a fight in 2019 against Frank Tate. It was 6-6. It was a decision. But fighting Alexis Garcia.
He'd melt the needle.
Who's from Alexis Garcia from Dominican Republic. It should be a decent one there. But really looking forward to TFC Boston. All it has to offer. A really good main event, and one that it could go either way. And we've seen middleweights moving up to light heavyweight with varied success, of course.
So for every Thiago Santos, there's Luke Rockhold. So you never know what's going to happen with these guys moving up a weight. That's the thing. I mean, we get another one here relatively soon. Jan Blachowicz for Jacare Souza. So it is kind of interesting. I really like the parity among weight classes. I do think that it offers a lot more fun mashups. Because the problem is, you'll have kind of like the same top 15 for about 2, 3, 4 years. And at a certain point, they've all kind of fought each other, so you're just trying to rush to put different fights together. So I really do like when guys do change weight class, especially a lot of really high-level 185ers moving up to 205, and it just makes for a lot of fun matchups. So that should be a really fun fight. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, a lot of really fun fights coming up here soon. You definitely want to tune in for them. Of course, you got Maya Askren from Singapore, which I love when they just...
K1 Damian Maya might make an appearance.
I love it when the UFC makes a run to Singapore and just tries to go head-on with one championship and has a lesser card, but this one is actually pretty good. And then you've got the BMF title, UFC 244, which is just awesome, and so on and so forth. It's a good lineup to round out the year, the last quarter of the year. Really looking forward to it, and want to thank everybody for tuning into this week in MMA on Fight Night Picks. Don't forget to check out our 2-minute prediction videos.
Like, subscribe.
Also, maybe have a look at Strikeforce. It's a really decent product. We get some in the mail. We're going to have a little bit of a video coming up with Strikeforce Energy, as well as Spretzebox. It helps us out, and we really believe in the products as well, or we wouldn't be hawking them. Exactly. So, thanks again for tuning in. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FMP, at Matt Allen FMP. We will catch you again next week with more fight-related content. As I always say, let's get into it.